Future-proof gold from News Talk.
Now, there are things in life that we instinctively know to avoid. Be it pain, or indeed bugs that cause us pain, we all know to get away whenever we can. That is, of course, unless you're Justin Schmidt. As an entomologist, he's devoted his life not only to the study of insects that sting, but more specifically to the pain that they inflict. He joins me now. Justin, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Good. And you?
I'm very good. What drew you to these creatures? Why are you so interested in insects that sting?
Well, really, these are kind of questions that you never really know at the time you're doing it. You're just, you know, kind of doing things, enjoying life, and you find out, hey, this is kind of fun and interesting. And I was always attracted to the beautiful, playful wasps and bees. You know, they were colorful. They'd flit from flower to flower. I just thought, what a good life. And I just, somehow or other, they always kind of caught my attention and intrigued me.
And so why focus on the sting, though?
I think the sting is the thing that really catches our attention. You know, we like kind of a little bit of fright, and yet we like an excitement, but yet we're kind of afraid of it as well. And so the sting is that thing. Oh boy, could this hurt me? Well, let's see. Can I be a little rascally and get up close and look at it? What's it going to do if I do that? It's just a little bit of a sign of adventure.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the science of these stings? When did these sort of insects start to sting? Like, is this something that goes way, way back? And why do insects sting?
Yeah, the kind of the evolution of the stinging behavior goes way back when the first hymenoptera, that's wasps, ants, and bees, were evolving. And their original ancestors didn't really sting. They had a long ovipositor in many cases, and they paralyzed prey, sawflies or caterpillars or something of that sort. So they used them for dinner, for getting, you know, for their young. And it wasn't until much later that the sting as a weapon of defense evolved. And that came mainly when insects started aggregating and forming social colonies. And here they needed some way to protect themselves against big predators like you and me, or that hedgehog down the way that's, you know, looking for a tasty snack.
So talk to us about the sting itself, because it doesn't make much sense to me from an evolutionary point of view, or at least from a protection point of view. The bee, we know, once the bee stings you, that bee dies. Why has it evolved that way? And do all insects die when they sting?
Well, here's where it kind of comes into the kind of the tricky part, that a bee is fairly small to us, but if it's on your arm, it's fairly big. And so when they sting you, it takes about 2 minutes to get all of the venom delivered into you. Whereas if it stings and hurts, you can knock it off or knock it away within a matter of a second or two. And it only gets a small amount of its venom into you. And since many things, you know, we're kind of the exception, we don't have a dense coat of fur or scales like a bird or lizard has, or feathers like a bird, we're pretty easy to sting. But most predators are hard to sting. And so if you get lucky enough to get a sting, say, around the mouth or the eyes or someplace that's vulnerable, you want to deliver the whole payload, not just a little bit of it. You want the whole works. And if you lose your stinger, that's kind of a sneaky way of accomplishing that, because the animal knocks you away and says, ah, bee's gone, or thinks bee's gone. And so it's the end of the problem. Well, not really, because the stinger is still stuck in you, and it's pumping away for the next minute or two and putting the whole load of venom in. And the advantage here is that it may be very, very hard to actually get the sting planted in the first place. So if you get it there, you want the whole payload, and that's why their life is sacrificed to make the long-term delivery rather than the short-term.
Right. So do all animals that sting then die once they've stung?
No, the honeybee is actually one of the rare ones, the only one actually in Europe. And in most of North America where I am, it's also the main one. But we do have some harvester ants which will also do that, a couple of. These are big red ants. Oh, they're about 8 to 10 millimeters long. And in the tropics of the New World, Brazil and Colombia, Venezuela, this sort of area, Central America, there's about a dozen wasp species that'll do this, social wasps. Now, the interesting thing when you look at these is what do they have in common? And what they have in common is they're all huge colonies, many thousands of insects in most cases, sometimes just hundreds. So here, if you lose one out of, you know, 100 or 1,000, it's no big deal. You know, the colony will survive. Whereas if you're a small colony of, say, paper wasps that we have of maybe 50 individuals in a colony, if you lose one, that's a pretty important thing. And so those don't tend to lose their stings, and no solitary wasp or bee does. Because, you know, if you're a solitary mom and you're taking care of all of your young yourself, and if you lose your stinger, well, you die, and the family stops. So it's only the very large colonies that have this.
You said if you're a mother and you're looking after your offspring, that sort of goes against what I thought I knew about these sort of insects. I didn't realize they cared for their young. Do they, or is that a turn of phrase?
Yeah, most of them don't. You're correct. Some of the social, like the paper wasps that we have, do, and bumblebees do, of course, also, which are usually small colonies. Many of the solitary ones, some do, but most of them will make a cell, and they'll put the caterpillar or the fly or the beetle, you know, whatever their particular host is that they feed, they'll put it in the cell. It's usually paralyzed, lay an egg and close it up. And so then they're done as far as their motherhood chores for that particular young.
Hmm.
But
there's a meal. See you later.
Yeah.
Your dinner's in the oven.
Exactly. And I'm off to help your little brother or sister. So then she will go out and try to catch more and make another cell. And so she'll have another young. And so as long as she's alive, she can make one young at a time, keep adding them on. If she dies, well, you know, she ends right there. Maybe one baby or two or three, and maybe right. She could have made another four or five or even more.
So I want to get to the pain in a second, because I know you have some interesting stories on that. But before we do, what happens on a biological level when these things sting? What is venom, and why does it make us hurt?
Yes, venom is basically a liquid that's injected through a natural syringe. We've all gone to the doctor and gotten an injection. Well, it's pretty much the same thing. They have a hollow tube, and they have a reservoir, which is like the barrel of your syringe, and it's full of a liquid. In most cases, that liquid is protein. It's peptides, proteins. So these are soluble things. You could imagine them somewhat like diluted white of egg. You know, they're protein that if you cook it, it would turn white and inactive and solid. But they're liquid at this point, and they inject them. The advantage of this is if you took something like a venom and put it on your skin, because it's a protein, it can't get through the skin barrier. You know, we have a very, very good skin, actually. It's a wonderful protective system. And it can't get through, so it can't do its damage. Whereas if you inject it, then you get below the skin, and then you can cause the pain and you can cause the damage.
So this protein, what does it do? Because my understanding is that some insects are really quite Machiavellian. They're quite nasty little things. And not only do they give you this really painful poison, but some of them also inject you with something that attracts other members of its colony to attack you too, like sort of a flag, you know, the ant raising its arm and saying charge to the whole colony.
Exactly. This is another brilliant evolutionary strategy that, as I mentioned earlier, it's often very hard to actually find a vulnerable chink in the armor of who's attacking you. So once you do, then you want to say, hey, sisters, this is a weak spot. Come attack here. I got through. I succeeded. You come and do the same thing.
Wow.
So the honeybee does this with this kind of odor that to me smells like a mixture of fingernail polish and a ripe banana. Anybody that worked bees smells that. It's not really offensive, But it is scary when you smell that, trouble's on the way.
When you say trouble's on the way, you mean that there are more likely bees on their way to sting you. And this is something you have probably unparalleled experience of. Is it not, Justin? You've been stung quite some time. Can you talk to us about the pain index and the amount and type of animal, insects that have actually stung you?
I've been stung by pretty much just about anything that's common and is able to sting in the bee, wasp, and ant category. There's of course many, many that I haven't, but often it's, you know, for example, you have the little red ants that live in Europe, and they kind of nest in their little red things, and if you're digging in the garden and they get on your hands, they kind of sting you. And they sort of hurt a little bit, and they're not very pleasant. So I've worked on those, and I've worked on, of course, wasps and hornets and all sorts of different kinds of ants. And, of course, honeybees were my mainstay.
Is there a particular part of the world where you haven't been stung? I mean, you're talked about Africa and Europe and America. Is there a part of the world where you don't find these sort of stinging animals?
Pretty much anywhere that's not really inclement, you'll find stinging, particularly ants, because ants kind of live just about anywhere. You can even go to very cold places, and like your little red ants, you know, they'll live on pretty nasty cold areas of Scandinavia and such as that, and they can sting. The extreme place, of course, Antarctica, obviously there's nothing there. There's nothing pretty much except a few penguins and a couple of obscure insects that can take that harsh climate. Pretty much otherwise, anywhere you go, even harsh deserts, like you can go into the Sahara or parts of Saudi Arabia, which are pretty hot, pretty dry, and pretty, you know, miserable places to be during the summer. And there's stinging things there.
Which makes the whole experience that much more pleasant. When you say ants sting you, is there a different? I mean, these Heptaptera, as you call them, the sort of family of bees, ants, and wasps that don't include, of course, arachnids or scorpions, which do sting, but they're a different sort of family. These guys, is it all stinging? Like when an ant stings you, is that a sting with a syringe, like you describe it, or is that a bite?
A little bit of both. Many of the common ants, the very first venom ever described was by a guy named J. Ray in 1670 in the British Isles. And he distilled a bunch of the common wood ant, the ones that make those big round thatched mounds that you'll sometimes see. And he distilled them and came up with formic acid. And that was the very first one. So those bite. But they have a clever little approach that they have no stinger. But where the stinger used to be, they now have a spray nozzle, and their venom, rather than a protein, is formic acid. And formic acid is interesting because it is topically active. You spray formic acid into your eyes or your nose or on a delicate piece of your skin, it'll burn. I don't know if you've ever run into that.
Not really.
And then you do the extra trick that these ants will do, is they bite you. So you see, if you get bitten, then they braid the skin. They curl their abdomen around, nasty little rascals. They'll curve their abdomen around where the venom comes from and spray it into the wound. It's kind of like biting you and then rubbing salt into the wound. And it actually feels to me often like a sting, although it's not a true sting. It's just an abrasion, a scrape by the mandibles with really miserable formic acid burning away at that wound now. So it can be actually quite effective.
Take us through the different types of pain, because you have developed what you call the Schmidt Index of pain. And this is for people who might want to have an idea of how painful the sting of an individual insect is. So can you take us through some of the... So you have the sort of... bee sting as sort of a level 2. Talk to us about some of the ones that reside at the more extreme level of pain.
Yeah, the most extreme low level is males which can't sting at all. They look like the stinger, of course, was an ovipositor, an egg-laying tube, and well, males don't really lay eggs, so they can't sting. But some of them are tricksters, and they'll try to fake like they're stinging. They look like, you know, female. You know, you see a wasp, and it's a wasp. Well, it turns out if it's a male, it can't sting you, but it'll curve its tip of its abdomen around as if it's going to sting you, so it'll kind of poke you, and you often let it go. So it's a zero because it can't sting. But it's still not worthless. It often escapes. Then the next step up is a one. And the little red ants that I mentioned that you've probably all seen in your yard, and maybe to your lack of enthusiasm, they're pretty much a one. They hurt a little bit, and you don't like it, and you brush them off. But you're not going to get a whole lot of sympathy out of anybody. Oh, my goodness, I survived this horrible stink, you know. It's not that severe. So basically, a honeybee is a two. The little red ant is a one. Then we go up to a three, and we get things like the harvester ants of North America. And the description would be, after 8 unrelenting hours of drilling into that ingrown toenail, you find the drill is wedged in the toe.
That's your description of that pain? Yeah, that sounds horrific.
So that's three. And threes will hurt for about 4 to 8 hours, so they're not a picnic.
But I mean, it's difficult for me to sort of imagine a pain worse than that. But these four, and there aren't that many in this the final category of four, isn't that right? You only have a few species that are worthy of this sort of pain.
I only have three of them, so one of the more interesting ones is a tarantula hawk, and they, of course, paralyze tarantulas. It's a great big wasp. And this is a blinding, fierce, shockingly electric. A running hairdryer has just been dropped into your bubble bath.
Nice.
And so, you know, obviously I've never dropped a hairdryer in a bubble bath, but I think we can all imagine what that's going to feel like. And that's pretty much what the tarantula hawk will actually feel like.
For how long?
The good thing about the tarantula hawk is it's 2 to 3 minutes. And so I recommend people that get stung by them, I say, lay down and scream. Well, if you lay down, you can't injure yourself any further, because if you're bumbling around trying to be tough, you're likely to trip on something and hit your head. So if you lay down, you can't get any more damage. Screaming, well, it feels good. By the time you're exhausted, the pain's pretty much gone. So why not? You know, no point in being polite. Just scream and have a good time about it as best you can. So the bullet ant is another four. They live in Central and South America. I describe them as pure, intense, brilliant pain, like walking over flaming charcoal with a 3-inch nail embedded in your heel.
I mean, it sounds like you take some sort of weird pleasure in the experience. Am I wrong? I mean, as an entomologist, someone who studies insects, you would imagine you should be better prepared to not be stung by all these insects, Justin. But it seems like you've been stung by many.
Usually I try not to get stung, but unfortunately we have this old saying that opportunity knocks but once and flees. So one time I was in Central America just enjoying a leisurely stroll about two kilometers up a nice little river, looking at birds and all, not thinking anything about insects, and I found a rare wasp nest. Well, I had a net and I had a couple of bags, and I thought, by darned, I've been here three times and I've never seen them in all these years of looking around. So you go after them. Well, you end up getting stung. But I got a very valuable data point, you know, not just for the pain, but also for I'm interested in the chemistry and biochemistry of how the venom operates. So most of my stings were something like that. You know, there's limited opportunities. They're often hard to find, these things. I had another black wasp in Central America, which is a similar experience, in a thorn bush, and I couldn't get through the thorn bush. And so to dig my way through the thorn bush, well, yes, I got a few stings. And some of them you just can't avoid, like the the bullet ant, if you mess with bullet ants, you will be stung. You know, they just boil out. They're very sticky, very agile, very fast.
And how long does that pain last? Because that's the one that I was like walking over a flaming charcoal with a 3-inch nail in your heel. How long would that pain last?
That pain of that nail in your heel lasts about 12 to 24 hours.
You're joking.
It keeps going. Yeah, it's like having the nail poked in and then pulled out and then poked in again. It goes in waves with a crescendo of pain, and then it decreases, and then, my goodness, back again. And it does this. There's many famous naturalists who have written their experiences of this, and pretty much all of them agree that this is something you do not want to experience.
So, what is the biochemistry that's going on then? Because this venom can penetrate cell membranes, it can manipulate neurons, it can sort of work your own body against you in a way, kind of depending on the venom.
Well, exactly. And some of them, like the bullet ant, is the most unusual of all of them. And I think it just happened to by an evolutionary mutation that just turned out in their favor. It's been a separate lineage of one species for 100 million years, so nobody else has invented this solution. It's the most intense pain of any insect venom that I know of. We have a name for it. It's called Ponera toxin, based on the Latin name Paraponera. But that's a unique one, and it actually affects the system in our nerves that causes the pain, so it directly affects that. Some of the others, like the honeybee, is kind of like adding a kind of a micro meat cleaver into your body that's shredding your membranes of your cells, including nerve membranes. And that's why it kind of feels like a bee sting, like a hot burning match had been applied to your skin, because it's just basically chewing up everything in sight, causing tremendous havoc, you know, in the process of doing that.
Right.
And then there's... So some of the others have, you know, different mechanisms, but they all pretty much commonly converge on the thing, ouch, they all pretty much make you hurt.
You know, speaking with you, I'm sort of, I've got maybe that small part of Johnny Knoxville that's in all of us. I sort of want to experience one of these things in the same way I'd like to once eat a Naga ghost chili. There's something sort of stupidly, inanely macho going on in my brain. I really would like to experience what a bullet ant pain feels like. Maybe on some of my traces, I might ask you for a field guide one day. Justin Smith, from the Department of Entomology, the University of Arizona, and author of The Sting of the Wild, creator of the Schmidt Sting Pain Index. Justin, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.